carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gonna throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, side of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Johnson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlights. Stand by host. You big boys.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park. For the next 3 hours, we have you covered. Everything to do with the Winnipeg Jets, the first place Winnipeg Jets, and the first place Manitoba Moose. It is high times for a hockey fan here in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Drew Mendel, joined at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park by Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If it's a good text, if it's a good tweet, I might even read it on air. We'll see. We'll see how the morning shakes out. And, of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, Ezzy, Dave, good morning. Good to see you here. Always a great cause as we're here at Toy Mountain at Polo Park. It is, you know, one of our favorite days of the year, our favorite broadcast of the year, to be here live supporting the Salvation Army and their tremendous toy drive as it is underway here this on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. It's great to be here, and I'm getting really pumped up about hitting up New York Fries a little bit later, maybe, you know, hitting up a little taco time in the CF Polo Park food court. But no, it's going to be lots of fun. We're going to be raising a little money. We're going to be taking in some toys for a good cause here and, you know, talking about, as you mentioned, the Red Hot Jets.
The first place Winnipeg Jets, Dave Manuk. First place Manitoba Moose as well. It is tremendous time for hockey fans here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. You can't go to the Bell MTS place without seeing a lot of goals, apparently.
Yeah.
I think 100 goals are going to be scored each night, and you know, you'll have an opportunity again tonight to see the Manitoba Moose have a rematch with the Cleveland Monsters, and then tomorrow end off with the Jets and Senators. So lots of hockey to come from at Bell MTS Place, and again, lots of winning, apparently, with these both these teams.
You know, guys, it's incredible. You know, the TSN stats team put this out last night. What the Winnipeg Jets are doing right now at home is truly incredible. The Winnipeg Jets have not lost a game in regulation at home since October 17th. The last nine games, 8-0-1, averaging five goals a game, 2.44 goals against, a power play of 43.8%, Dave.
I think that's good.
Unbelievable.
You think that's good? Deep analysis says that that is a good percentage on your power play.
It really is incredible.
Let's get started into last night's Jets-Vegas Golden Knights game. A 7-4 sort of old-school 1980s-style shootout between these two teams. It didn't look like it was going to be that kind of game, you know, right up until sort of the second period began there. Late in the second period, really, when it was, you know, a 2-2 game after Matt Hendricks equalized it after, you know, after the Golden Knights thought they went up 3-1. The Jets had that opportunity, or they challenged the goal, and it turned out it was offside by the tiniest of margins. And the Jets end up coming back to tie the game rather than being down 3-1. And from my estimation, as I think that was the TSN turning point in last night's game, the sort of, I don't know if the Jets got momentum as a result, but Vegas doesn't score. And then Matt Hendricks scores that goal on Lagesse, who doesn't take a great angle on it. It's 2-2, and then the floodgates opened up in the third period.
Right, and Matt Hendricks got the Matt Hendricks hat trick, skate to the face,
yes,
blocked shot,
and a
beautiful
goal.
It was a nice goal, and you're right, Drew. Max Lagesse was maybe cheating a little bit, but give Matt Hendricks credit. It was a bit of a off angle, right? And he puts it on net top corner, and I don't think it was deflected at all.
It was
just
a clean goal,
a straight clean goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Matt Hendricks isn't a guy necessarily necessarily that in that game you're expecting to kind of blow it open offensively, but he really did, right? And you mentioned it kind of reminded you of the game on Monday night, which the Jets won 7-2. You know, the game was tied. Minnesota got out to the lead. And, you know, to me, that's really what you're seeing in this year's Jets team that you maybe didn't see last year. You know, Vegas had all of the momentum when they went up 2-1 and almost went up 3-1. But back to the disallowed goal, when you see the referees and, you know, the war room in Toronto, when that call is being reviewed and it's taking a little long, it probably means that the call is going to get overturned when they're taking that long, right? And it was offside. Yeah. And you could say that, you know, it was only offside by a skate blade, but the rule is the rule. And, you know, the Jets benefited. And, you know, those two goals that were scored on the power play early in the period, in the third period, I mean, to me, that was the game. The Jets' power play just keeps rolling. We talked about it. Last nine games, you know, the Jets' power play is at 44%. It's incredible.
You know what? It's interesting because after the game, we were talking to Blake Wheeler and Sean Reynolds said to him about Paul Maurice making the call to have that goal, disallowed goal.
Review, the challenge goal.
The challenge goal, which would have made it 3-1. And not necessarily blown up in the game, but it would have made it a tougher game for the Jets. And Blake Wheeler kind of laughed and said, oh, are you sure it was him? And he said, well, you should probably ask him in the post game. Which they did. And it's funny because I had said to Ez when we were in the press box that I said, I don't know who's doing it. I'm assuming it's Matt Prefontaine.
Yeah, Matt Prefontaine, the video coach.
The video coach for the Jets.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were fortunate in the sense that the play went on for about a minute. So it wasn't as if the play had been, offside and Vegas scored and it was quick and you had to make a quick judgment call. Vegas had control of the puck in the Jets zone for a while. So they had time, Matt Prefontaine, that is, had time to review it. Mm-hmm. At the same time as Blake Wheeler saying, let's challenge that when he gets back to the bench. And at that point, they've had enough time to watch it from enough angles to determine that that was. But again, that to me is the whole game, because instead of being a 3-1 Vegas lead, it ends up being 2-1. And the Jets, of course, tie it with Hendrick Skoll.
I would agree with you, because you look at it from the Vegas perspective. So they're on the second half of a back-to-back. They lose in Minnesota on Thursday. So they come into Winnipeg, and they're playing a good game. I mean, they're up 2-1. I thought they
initially they were. I mean, the Jets were out shooting them 9-1.
Yeah,
to
in
start,
the first 5-10 minutes, but I thought Vegas got their legs behind
they did,
them.
Yep.
And then I thought Vegas was probably the better of the two teams from the end of the first period and the beginning of the second period. Regardless, I mean, it's not important. But anyways, Vegas has the opportunity to go up 3-1, and then they would be, you know, they'd have a lot of momentum, and they wouldn't be worried about their heavy legs. They wouldn't be worried about being tired when you're up 3-1 at that point. Instead, I think it's a little deflating, a little demoralizing. It's 2-1 only. Hendricks comes back, scores, you know, not that long after that to make it 2-2. And then in the third period, the Jets really just stepped on them and took it to them.
And Drew, not only does it go from possibly 3-1 Vegas, it goes to 4-2 Jets, right?
Yeah.
Like, to me, the Line A goal, the second power play goal, was the killer. Mm-hmm. Right? And I realized that, you know, after Ehlers scored to make it 5-2, Eric Halla scored, you know, I believe it was 20 seconds after that. And, you know, Eric Halla kind of went down the ice. Everyone at Bell MTS Place is celebrating, and it's 6-4.
Yeah.
And, pardon me, 5-3 at the time. Then later it was 6-4. But to me, that was the killer goal, right? Because we know, guys, that Connor Hellebuck very rarely gives up more than two goals in a game, right? That was kind of one of those rare games. Actually, twice so far this year against Vegas, he's given up a lot of goals. But you know what I mean. I mean,
usually
to go from up two goals to down two goals,
it's
Drew,
a huge
it's
momentum.
A killer.
It's a huge momentum flip.
And again, going back to what Blake Wheeler said, his comment was, you can't imagine how deflating that is for a team thinking you've just scored to make it a two-goal lead and have that goal taken away for what seems like not a very significant reason, but the reality, because of how hard goals are to come by.
Except in the third period yesterday, but you're absolutely
right. But you know
right.
what I mean in terms of generating the goal.
If you're Vegas, you're flying, you're feeling great, you're up 3-1, you know, you're in the second period, this is an opportunity, this is a team you've beaten not that long ago. They think that this is a golden opportunity. Instead,
no pun intended.
Yeah, pardon, that's true. I never thought about that.
By the way, Drew, are we going to have your dad live on air here?
I'm not sure. He's just standing here. He came and he made a donation. I saw that, so good on him.
He's basking in his son's hosting skills.
Well,
right now,
if he hangs out for a little while longer, I suspect his grandchildren and his daughter-in-law Ooh. Are also going to be showing up. So
I think we should have Sheldon live on air.
Well, we'll see about that. Maybe a little bit later on in the broadcast.
I think the people want to hear it.
I don't know if the people want to hear it. I got to be honest. And I think he's going to hang out though. And now that I told him his grandchildren are coming, I think he's especially going to hang out. But you know, and then you look at that third period, and it starts with that power play opportunity. Great pass by Patrick Laine. He hits Kyle Connor, who makes no mistake, you know, with that one-timer on a stick, off a stick, as quickly as you can expect.
I thought that was maybe Kyle Connor's best game of the year.
Yeah. It was, and it was, you know what, that was a nice goal for him too. I mean, that's what we were used to seeing with Kyle Connor from the AHL, is just a quick release, a great shot, and you know what, he made no mistake about it, and it was a critical goal, right? I mean, it was an early third period, they had the power play, and to me, again, as he's talking about how deflating it was, that goal really, because, you know, it was a late penalty in the to end the second period for Vegas. The Jets had an opportunity. If they would have, you know, if they don't score, it keeps Vegas in the game. They get that goal, then they keep it rolling.
And, guys, we also have to mention Mark Scheifele. I mean, Mark Scheifele could have had a hat trick in the first two periods. He hits a crossbar. Max Lagasse absolutely robs him to his right earlier in the game.
And he missed an empty net.
And, you know, he was moving the puck really well on the power play. And, you know, he gets the goal in the third period that turned out to be, I believe that was the sixth Jets goal. There were so many goals, I forget which one that was.
It was the sixth goal before the empty netter by Connor.
Right, and Scheifele was great, and he's been great with Wheeler and Connor on that top line all year, but I thought Scheifele in that third period, kind of him, Wheeler, and Connor really kind of took the game into their own hands.
You look at Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine in that first period, and they both had a couple golden opportunities, and they both looked skywards at different points in time. Well, and that just tells you the expectations these guys have for themselves in that, you know, they're struggling a little bit, and in that first period they have golden opportunities, they don't convert on it, and they both looked like they were frustrated. Blake Wheeler slamming a stick against the glass on that power play where the Jets had three or four golden opportunities.
I mean, Drew, is this the best offensive team in the league right now?
Talent-wise, from top to bottom, I have to think they are.
They seem to be clicking in that regard. I mean, right now, they're atop the NHL standings. I mean, you sort of have to pinch yourself because we're so used to, you know, the bottom falling out or the Jets losing that game last night or the Jets losing that game on Monday in Minnesota, or against Minnesota. But they just continue to roll.
I think it's twofold. I think that, one, this team definitely doesn't get overexcited about their wins, and so they don't allow themselves, and you hear it after the game, and you know, look, what they're saying publicly to the media could be vastly different from the atmosphere when they come into the dressing room blasting Celine Dion and the pumped excitement that they have after a game and after a win, and they're very muted with us, and they're just talking about, you know, well, you know, we've got to treat it as one game, and you know, Blake Wheeler was asked, what does it feel like to be at the top of the NHL or tied with Tampa, I guess, top in the NHL.
Dave, will your heart go on?
My heart will go on, as but only when I'm with you.
Yeah.
But the point is that he just basically isn't allowing this team, as the leader of this team, to get too high with the victories, because he knows that you can't get too low, too high. So that's one of it. And I think, again, it's from the coaching staff. They're not allowing this team to get too overexcited, because the reality is, look, yesterday was a decent game, but there's a lot of games when they're being outshot and outchanced, and you know, the good goaltending has saved them. So this is a team that still has some a ways to go, which isn't a bad thing, because Blake Wheeler said it, and he's right. They still have to hit their stride, but they're on the right way.
And if you're saying that this team has a ways to go and they're tied for first in points with the Tampa Bay Lightning, that shows you that the bottom isn't going to fall out on this team. I mean, and, you know, we're 26 games into the season, guys, but that's a third of the way through the season.
Yeah.
And so at this point, you know, you expect there to be some losing streaks. I don't expect there to be any extending losing streaks, but to think that this isn't going to be a playoff team is ridiculous. I don't know what the stats are right now, but I would say that the Jets' chances of making the playoffs are very close to 100%, considering the cushion they've built themselves.
Well, your dad's a math professor, so that's pretty much a guarantee right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's the expectation to me. I think they expect to win on a night-in, night-out basis, which is not something that you necessarily would have said about this team in the last 5-6 years, that any time they won, it was almost a bonus that they won, as opposed to now where most nights they, I think, look at their opponent and they say, we expect to be victorious.
No, sorry, Drew, the donuts are here. I'm going to lose all focus right now.
He's got nothing. He's chewing right now. But, no, I was going to say, the interesting thing to me at least is the fact that these guys don't allow them to score the score to dictate their play. And again, that's true to your point, which is what they would have seen previously, is the fact that this team is, they go down a goal, 2-1, you know, in a game that really they, as we were talking about earlier, had control over, and all of a sudden, they're down 2-1. Now, they don't panic. They don't show panic in the game. They get back into it. Now, of course, it could have been different if it was 3-1, but of course, the disallowed goal, or the challenge goal, I should say, allowed them to kind of gain back that momentum. But from what we've seen from this team, they don't allow panic to set in, And I think that's part of the reason for their success.
Ezzy, to answer your question about the probability of the Jets making the playoffs, TheAthletic.com updates this every single day. Dom Luchician updates it after every game.
What
on
is it, 99%?
Night. It is actually only 87% that they're going to make the playoffs. But they are expected, the projected record will end up with them having 100 points, which somehow only translates to an 87% probability of them making the playoffs.
Oh, it's out then.
When we come back, there was an honest-to-goodness hockey trade in the NHL this week. Tom Gulitti of NHL.com joins us to talk about the trade between the Ducks and the Devils. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park. Come say hello. We're on TSN 1290. We're live at CF Polo Park as part of Toy Mountain. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Tom Gulitti. Tom, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, good morning. How are things there in Winnipeg, having your first place team there?
Well, I think people are still pinching themselves a little bit to wake up this morning and look at the standings and see the Jets up at the top of the Western Conference and tied for the overall NHL lead with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But, people aren't complaining, not in the least bit, that's for sure. Tom, we had an honest-to-goodness NHL hockey trade this week between the Ducks and the Devils, the key components being the Ducks acquiring Adam Henrik and the Devils acquiring Sammy Vatanen. You know, obviously it's early in the trade and each team has only played, I think, a game with their new player. But is this, on paper, look at the kind of trade that could benefit both teams equally?
Yeah, I think so. It addressed the need for both sides, obviously. Anaheim had a little bit of a surplus on defense, and the Devils, after building up their depth at forward, they were able to move. They had the depth to trade an Adam Henrik and get back the top four defenseman that they needed, because that was an area of weakness for them. And I think Sammy Vatanen will help them a lot, and I think Adam Henrik will help the Ducks in that, you know, they've got some players injured, some centers injured with Kessler and Ryan Getzlaff, and so he can help fill in at center right now, and when everyone's healthy, he can be a third-line center, or he can shift to wing and play in the top two lines. So Adam's a pretty versatile player, so that I think it will help both teams, like you said.
Tom, when you consider that defense was a weakness for the Devils last year, they were allowing too many goals, and then you look at that decor for the Devils now that features Andy Green, Sammy Vatanen acquired from the Ducks, Will Butcher, who was obviously the big free agent signing, Damon Severson, Ben Lovejoy, John Moore. Is it safe to say that Ray Shiro has done a really nice job of rebuilding that decor for the Devils?
I think he's done a decent job of rebuilding that. I think they have a little bit of work to do there still. I think they might need another top 4D, and I wouldn't be surprised in the next year or so that they do add one. But they're much better than they were. They're better. They're moving the puck. You know, the game today, it's very important to move the puck out of your end quickly and efficiently, get the puck to your forwards, and with the speed that the Devils have now, you don't have to do as much. You get them the puck, and they can and they're on attack pretty quickly. So that Ray definitely has done a good job of just transitioning that team from being a slower, they were offensively challenged and they had problems at the end to much faster and more efficient getting the puck out. And, you know, now with Corey Schneider playing better in that, they're a much better team than they were last year.
Tom, how much credit does head coach John Hines deserve for what he's been able to do in New Jersey and, you know, have them, you know, battling the Columbus Blue Jackets for top spot in the Metropolitan right now?
Oh, he definitely deserves credit for that. You know, last year was not a good year for the Devils, but they didn't, with some injuries, and they didn't play very well, and they didn't have the same kind of depth. They had a tough year, I thought he did an excellent job his first year 2 years ago when they, you know, got some guys really buying into what they wanted to do. They fell short of making the playoffs, but they had a pretty good season. Last year was a step back. I think this year you're seeing he has more talent to work with. He's getting a lot out of these young guys like, you know, Nico Hischier and Jesper Bratt, and, you know, Ryan Gibbons has come out of nowhere to score 11 goals. So he's gotten a lot out of what he has there, and they suddenly look a lot different as a team than they did a year ago.
Tom Gulitti is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing this week's Ducks-Devils trade. The trade saw Adam Henrik go to Anaheim, Sammy Vatanen go back to New Jersey. Tom, from the Anaheim perspective, you mentioned that Henrik could play the center, he could play wing. You know, when Getzlaff and when Kessler are back healthy, and that's sooner rather than later, I think, you know, closer to maybe the end of this month, but getting close indeed. You know, if the Ducks go Getzlaff, Kessler, Henrik, Antoine Vermette up the middle, is that really the best 1-4 up the middle in the NHL?
It's there. It's right there. You know, Pittsburgh had it, and they lost. You know, they missed Bonino and Cullen now, but that would be right there, I would say. Yeah, definitely a pretty good strength down the middle is important in this league we've seen, and so that, you know, they would definitely be pretty strong there, and that could make them hard out in the playoffs.
Tom, you're based in Washington, of course. You're going to be attending Caps practice in about 5 to 10 minutes. When you consider that the Capitals aren't where you'd expect them to be at the top of the standings, and they're kind of in the middle of that pack there in the Eastern Conference, what's the biggest problem that this team has right now?
Well, I think going into the season, I'm not surprised where they are right now, because they lost some players that were key players. They lost Justin Williams. They had to trade Marcus Johansson to the Devils because of cap reasons. So they lost their depth at forward. And on defense, you know, Carl Alzheimer is no longer here. They lost Nate Schmidt in the expansion draft. You know, Kevin Shattenkirk was here only for a short time, but that's three guys who were in their top six on D in the playoffs last year, and they're gone. And I think they're kind of finding their way as far as changing. You know, they can't get by just on skill anymore. They need to play within the system they have, and you know, they still have some pretty talented guys, obviously with Ovechkin and Backstrom and Oshie. You know, they had a couple of injuries here that hurt them too, with Burakovsky being hurt. But I think, you know, Kuznetsov, I didn't mention him either. But I think they need to play a more structured game. And when they don't play that structured game, that puts a lot of pressure on some of the young D they've been trying to work in. They've done a better job of that recently. They had a three-game winning streak before they lost to LA the other day. But I think you know, they have to. It's finding that consistency within their game that's going to be the key for them. Whether they're in the play, I think they'll be a playoff this team this year. But I'm really not surprised they're in that middle of that pack. You know, a lot of teams are kind of the same right now, and they're in terms of finding themselves, and it's taking a little bit longer. You know, but I think the Caps they should get in the playoffs, but you know, they have to find that consistency in their game.
You know, Tom, earlier when we were talking about Sammy Vatanen at the trade between the Devils and the Ducks. With Sammy Vatanen and Adam Henrik, you mentioned that the Devils might still be in the market for a top four defenseman. Do you think the Capitals are in the market for a top four defenseman right now?
Probably, but their issue they have is salary cap space, so they'd have to kind of find some way to work that out. I think they're hoping that Christian Juice can be a top four D, but I'm not sure that he can handle that at this point in his career. But yeah, they've been really pushing it with, you know, Brooks Orpik has actually played very well for them, but he's been in their top four and played increased minutes that he didn't play last year, and he has been pretty good for them. But I think they know going forward that that's probably not a sustainable thing as far as keeping him playing heavy minutes as you go through the season. So I think they were hoping that Christian Juice can play bigger minutes. If not, they got to try to go out and find somebody definitely.
Tom, you were talking about earlier about players that the Capitals had lost, and they just lost a fun one, Nathan Walker, first Australian to play in the NHL, to the Edmonton Oilers. I know you've written about him before. What exactly did the Oilers gain in Nathan Walker?
Oh, he's got speed. He's kind of like a tenacious, fast guy. You know, he can get in on the forecheck. When he played well in the preseason, that's the thing you saw. He got in there. Created havoc with his, you know, just kind of being in there and all over you and you know, relentless energy. I didn't see as much of that from him when he played in his regular season games, and I think they also thought he wasn't strong in his own end. And then some of the other forwards that they had, and with their really trying to win games, they really didn't want it. He didn't get in the lineup. He was not in their top four, 14 forwards. So he had been sitting for a while, and they really wanted to try to get him down to play in Hershey, and he got claimed by Edmonton. So I think it's good for him. He'll get a chance maybe there to give. They'll get a chance to play more consistently, and maybe get his feeling in the league. It's not an easy thing to just jump from the AHL to the NHL for some players, and I think him with more playing time will definitely help. Maybe they'll give him some time on the PK, which will also help him get some minutes.
Tom, we'll let you go on this last question. It's sticking in the Metropolitan Division. Are people overlooking the New York Islanders? They're, you know, currently second most goals for in the NHL. They had a bit of an ugly one last night against the Senators. But are people overlooking this New York Islanders team for just how good they are?
I'm not. I think they're really good. Obviously, they need to play a little better defensively. They've had a little, and they might need to upgrade in that area. But I think people realize that they're really talented as far as if they can score goals. You don't want to, you know, Ottawa pulled that game out last night, but you probably don't want to get in that kind of run-and-gun game against the Islanders because they have, you know, they've shown they can score goals. And obviously John Tavares is having a great season, and now you look at Matthew Barzal and how well he's played for them as a rookie. They've got some talent up front. I think they may need to upgrade on their D, and, you know, I don't know if Halak and Greiss are able to play at the top level they need to succeed in long term in the playoffs, but maybe if they upgrade their D, it would help a lot.
Tom Gulitti is with NHL.com. Tom, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care, Tom. We are live at CF Polo Park for Toy Mountain. The place is filling up. There's volunteers everywhere. We got some jingle bells in the background. Come down, say hello.
Authentic.
Drop off authentic jingle bells as well. Exactly.
Spider-Man is here.
Drop off a toy. It goes all towards the Salvation Army this time of the year. We know that it's an important time of the year. When we come back, we're going to discuss Patrick Laine. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, it's a mouthful, visit Linden Market Dental Center. com.
I saw Dr. Les Rikus at the Jets game yesterday.
Well, he was on the Jumbotron, I believe.
Yep. Was he? Yep. Okay, there you go. He's famous, you know, the camera just finds him and spots him and showcases him wherever he may be.
By the way, Drew, before we get into Patrick Laine here,
yeah.
Do you know if they still have Randy River here? Because I want to get a new pair of jeans.
It would be over there. Okay. I remember it was way at the end near the bay.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't remember, but there you go. Okay. You and Dave can go for a walk after.
Maybe we should take Randy with us.
Take Randy from Virgin 103.
Yeah, take Randy Lynn to
Randy River.
To Randy River. Yeah. Even though Randy River, I believe, is no longer in.
So you're just going to wander the mall with Randy Lynn then?
Yeah.
After the show is over, I want to get some New York fries.
Colonels.
And I want to go to
right
Randy
there.
River.
Dave's a big popcorn guy.
I'm a big popcorn guy.
Laine last night, guys, with a goal and two assists for 3 points. So he's feeling good about himself this Saturday morning. But prior to the game yesterday, on Friday morning, he had some very interesting comments in the pregame scrum after practice, coming off of the effort on Wednesday, where he certainly didn't get a lot of ice time and didn't have a good game in Denver on Wednesday. Here's what Patrick Laine had to say yesterday morning about his performance.
After so long, I'm wondering, is there something you're not doing or something that Paul wants you to do? If you're not, your numbers are going to go up.
That's a good question. I'm not deciding that. I'm just going on the ice every time they want me to go. But I just try to work hard every shift and earn some more ice time.
It's hard to find your pacing when you play less than you're used to.
I mean, when you've used to play 17 minutes and you're maybe playing 4 or 5 minutes less, it's going to affect something, but I mean, it doesn't matter how much you're playing. You need to play hard every shift, and when you're playing hard and when you're doing good things on the ice, you're going to get hopefully more ice time, and that's what I want to do.
Have you guys been talks about it?
Yeah, I mean, he wants me to do certain things, and I'm definitely going to do those things and try to improve my game and earn those minutes back for sure. I mean, could be better. It's like my confidence is not up again, but I just try to work hard every shift. It doesn't matter it doesn't matter what your confidence level is. Just try to work hard and do those simple things on the ice and do those winning little things on the ice. Yeah. I mean, the last game for me was tough. I wasn't on my game and I was playing pretty bad. So that's why probably I didn't play much. But hopefully it's a better night tonight. And if it's up to me, it's going to be a good night.
Patrick, you think the guy has to score to be happy? Do you have to?
No. It's always nice to score. Like, I think everybody in this room would probably feel the same, but I think it's a team sport, so the winning is the most important thing, and we're winning, so it's good.
We hear about sophomore slumps, the difficulties that you can have in your second year. What's been different this year? What is maybe a challenge that you wouldn't have expected coming this year?
I think if I would say, maybe the game was just a little bit faster than last year. All the guys here have said it's the league is getting faster and faster all the time. So I just need to get faster. So maybe I'm a little bit slow with the puck right now. Just try to be faster and make good decisions with the puck.
That's Patrick Laine prior to last night's Jets Golden Knights game, a game where he had a goal and two assists. So he certainly, for a guy, again, every time he's low in confidence, he seems to bounce back really quickly with that. What I love about Patrick Laine, aside from, his tremendous skill, is that he's certainly unfiltered when it comes to his comments to the media. And that's refreshing from an NHL player.
Yeah, guys, it's the end of the month, which means that Patrick Laine is struggling with confidence. If you remember, the last time that Patrick Laine was speaking to the media about his lack of confidence was back before the game against the Dallas Stars, right around Halloween, and then he proceeded to go on an 8-game point streak, including 6 goals. So we've seen Patrick Laine say that he's struggling with confidence, so maybe Laine should say that before every game, and then he'll go out and he'll get a goal and 2 assists. But, I mean, the reality is, guys, Patrick Laine, I think, is a supreme talent that expects to be on the score sheet and expects to have an impact on the game every game, yeah. Right? And so the previous 3 games, he didn't have any points. But really, that game against Colorado, you could see that he was struggling with his confidence. And also, guys, you got to factor in, when you're talking about the ice time, his ice time is going to be higher when he's out on the power play, right? So you saw that yesterday. Laine got the goal on the power play. You expect him to be around, 16, 17, 18 minutes? He's not going to be a guy that plays 23 or 24 minutes. There's not many forwards that do. But the point is, when his ice time is down, then he knows that it's not just the lack of goal scoring that's preventing him from being on the ice. So when you talk about, Laine, and, unfortunately for this segment, he went out and he scored 3 points for the Jets. So,
which, by the way, you accurately predicted.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I went on Twitter last night and I said, a couple nights ago, and I said, Laine is going to score a hat trick because he's struggling with his confidence. But the reality is, I mean, there's still room to grow in his game. You can see that, especially when he doesn't have the puck at times. Laine, his positioning, that's something you learn. You forget, Drew, that he's 19 years old. And, even though there's room to grow, I mean, this is still one of the best goal scorers in the league right now. But as you mentioned, he's being honest with the media when he's saying, yeah, I can be better. And at times I am struggling with my confidence, but obviously last night he wasn't.
It's interesting, Dave. Laine looked at his ice time in November this year versus November last year, even strength ice time. And so for the last 6 games of November this year, so the games that just passed, he was averaging... last season he was averaging 13 minutes and 37 seconds per game, even strength ice time.
Yep.
This year, so the November, the last week and the couple weeks before that, only 11:55 in even strength ice time. So his even strength ice time is down by just under 2 minutes a game, at least in November it was, and it's a combination of maybe his performance hasn't been great in all those games, and then secondly, a combination of I think the Jets have more depth, so they're rolling the 4 lines.
I would be more inclined to believe it's the latter, Drew, to be honest with you. I think that, Coach Maurice touched on it a little bit yesterday in his comments about the ability to run 4 lines and have that depth and have that option and not have to worry about only playing your 4th line a few minutes a game and to be able to actually rely on them to get some scoring, not just rely on the first 2 lines, but knowing that that 4th line with Matthew Perreault, who, as we know, is no 4th liner, and even Joel Armia and apparently Matt Hendricks, who can put the puck in the net, you know, those guys can be relied upon. So the second line traditionally would be the second most relied upon line on a team. But what we were seeing from this coaching staff and across the board, and I think, you know, while people can get bogged down on the minutia of the minutes about, oh, he's playing too, the reality for a long 82-game NHL season is that this will have a collective, probably positive impact if you make a deep playoff run, because the point is, he's fresh. You're not worn down. And the fact is, when it comes to Patrick Laine, I think what we're seeing is the impact of a guy who didn't skate all summer. I think the fact of the matter, in my mind, is that had he been skating all summer, I think he'd have his legs. Because the truth is, when you look at him compared to a Nikolaj Ehlers, which is a bad example, because he's by far the fastest guy on the team, if not one of the fastest in the league,
It's
very hard to keep up with him. But you got to be able to keep up with Brian Little. And right now, he's struggling with that. He's getting better. There's no question about it. But that's his thing, is his step is just a little bit behind those other two guys.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, Dave, because you know what I look at, and you mentioned how Laine said he was pretty much off the ice for the majority of the offseason, and he was in the gym, and he was bulking up and everything else. He was trying to get stronger. The Josh Morrissey effect, the same thing that happened to Josh Morrissey two summers ago, where he bulked up too much in an effort to get stronger, because, you know, we thought he was getting pushed around a little bit, and it sapped him of some of his speed. And I wonder if, when this season's over, if Laine is going to look back and say, you know what, I spent too much time trying to get stronger in the gym and not enough time on the ice, when at some point in time, I know you're going up against, he's 19 years old, and there's man strength that you just don't develop when you're 19 years old, no matter how much time you spend in the gym ahead of that.
Yeah, Drew, but we should clarify, bulking up here. I mean, it's not like, Patrick Laine is trying to bench press 500 pounds. A lot of what these guys do is lower body strength and core strength.
Right.
Right? So no one's saying that Patrick Laine, like his goal in the offseason, was to, get the biceps bigger.
No.
Right. So, I mean, part of that lower body and core strength is to improve his skating, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, when you talk about, Dave makes a good point about the fact that, if he was on the ice a little bit more, he'd be a little bit quicker out there. But, the reality is, when you're talking about, his even strength ice time being down about a minute and a half, it's a good point that you make, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Because a minute and a half is significant, right? You're talking about, two, three, four shifts a game. But I think as the season progresses, those numbers will go up. But to Dave's point, I mean, the power play opportunities that the Jets have, sometimes Laine's out there for a minute, over a minute on the power play. So I think as the season progresses, and you have to look at the power play opportunities as well, also the way the line has been performing.
Sure.
Because I think, the way the Scheifele-Wheeler-Connor line has been going, I mean, Maurice has no problem playing that line 19, 20, 21 minutes a game, right? So it's definitely something to look at, and I think especially the way Laine was playing last night, I would expect those minutes against Ottawa to be increased.
Let me ask you this. When the Jets had that 4-on-3 power play in Denver on Wednesday, given that it was still sort of midway through the game at that point in time, and Laine hadn't been really noticeable, would you like to see him on the ice in a 4-on-3 power play situation like that?
Well, of course. I mean, he's arguably the most talented player on the Jets, and when you have Nikolaj Ehlers, Blake Wheeler, and Mark Scheifele on the team, it's tough to say that, Laine is the most skilled. But, of course, because, I mean, he's the sniper that we all, know and love. So anytime the Jets are in an odd man situation, 4-on-3, 5-on-4, if there were 3-on-2s, I'm joking.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you'd expect Laine to be out there because he's got that beautiful shot.
It's interesting, and I guess last word on the Patrick Laine, not saga, because it's certainly not a saga, but the last word on Patrick Laine goes to Dennis Bayak from last night's call in the Jets Golden Knights game. This is what Dennis Bayak had to say, and after that we'll head to break. We're live at CF Polo Park. Here's Bayak last night.
Carlson now, good work to try and get it out, but can't. Patrick Laine, he'll let score!
That was last night in Brooklyn as the Senators and the Islanders did battle. Thomas Chabot the prized possession of the Senators, their blue line, their blue chip prospect, gets his first NHL goal. The Senators end up beating the Islanders last night by a 6-5 score, another sort of old school 1980s game. Both starting goalies were pulled in that game. It was 5-all. About halfway through the second period there, Ottawa making their way to Winnipeg this morning. They're here to play the Jets tomorrow evening in the Jets and the Senators. Sort of been a down year for the Senators thus far. As I should make mention, of course, that we are live at CF Polo Park for Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army. Come on down. Bring a new toy, unwrapped toy, add it to the great pile. We're also accepting cash donations. There's great prizes to be won as well. So we're live at Center Court at CF Polo Park. But back to the Senators, Ezzy. Sort of been a down year for the Eastern Conference finalists last year. Only a 9-9-6 record for the Senators. Prior to last night's win, they had lost five games in a row. This was a Senators team that was struggling, and struggling offensively as well, until they broke out last night with that 6-5 victory over the Islanders.
Yeah, Drew, and you mentioned it's been a bit of a down year, and the Senators actually defeated the Colorado Avalanche back-to-back in overtime and identical 4-3 scores, and as you mentioned,
those games being played in Sweden, of course.
Right, and then when you talk about the last six games, as you mentioned, you had the losing streak there, and then Ottawa picks up a really big win against a really surprising Islanders team, a good surprising Islanders team. And, you know, the Ottawa Senators, it's kind of ironic what's happened this year. You know, the Ottawa Senators are not having trouble scoring goals. It's actually keeping them out of their own net. And what to me is the most surprising is that Craig Anderson has really struggled.
Really struggling.
And, you know, Craig Anderson and Mike Condon, you know, you look at that goalie tandem, it's one of the best goalie tandems in the entire league, in my opinion. And, you know, you expect Craig Anderson and Mike Condon to be better, but it's really letting them down this year. And, you know, Matt Duchene obviously has come in and, you know, he's only got the one goal in eight games, so he's been a little bit disappointing. But, you know, the Senators team, to me, guys, is still really skilled, and I wouldn't be surprised if, come April, this is a playoff team.
Yeah, the Senators, you mentioned their goaltending, Craig Anderson, .889 save percentage.
Isn't that incredible?
It's unbelievable how low it is, given he's been probably one of the, you know, top five, top 10 goalies in the league for the last number of years, and a 3.15 goals against average. So he is really struggling in net for the Senators, and a lot of people think that as Craig Anderson goes, so do the Ottawa Senators. You know, Dave, from my perspective, this is a team that misses Mark Methot. I mean, who they, of course, lost in the expansion draft to Vegas. He ends up in Dallas after being traded by the Golden Knights. But this is a team that I think misses Mark Methot. Erik Karlsson hasn't been Erik Karlsson really this year. And they're just a bit of a mess on the back end so far.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, they've allowed, I think, most or the third most goals against in the Eastern Conference right now. I mean, that's not a thing we're used to seeing from the Ottawa Senators.
Especially a Guy Boucher coach team, that's, Dave.
Yeah, usually they have a much better commitment to team defense so for and structure. So for this team to be allowing that many goals against, you know, and it obviously starts in goal, but, you know, we have a tendency, because the goalies are the ones who let the puck in the net, to blame goaltenders. But, you know, it's generally, as we've seen here in Winnipeg, it isn't always the goalie's fault. It's usually a collective team effort from the forwards on back to the goaltender. So, you know, it really seems to be a collective team effort from Ottawa right now that's lacking. And to me, actually, the curious thing, getting it back to the Winnipeg angle of this, is whether Eric Comrie makes his second NHL start, his first of this year. Steve Mason sounds like he's progressing from what Coach Marie said yesterday after the skate, but it wasn't. He's not skating with the team yet, and so as a result, and they're not having a skate today, they're only having a media availability in about an hour. So we may get an update from the coach, the Jets bench boss, in about an hour and a half, an hour and 15 minutes, about the status of Steve Mason and whether Eric Comrie may get his second start of his career. But, you know, it might be a good time to throw him in. The team's feeling good. Eric was playing extraordinarily well for the Manitoba Moose in the AHL. He and Michael Hutchinson, you want to talk about great tandems. I mean, those guys were lighting it up in the AHL. So I think it's a good chance, good opportunity to give Connor Hellebuyck a night off and to give Eric Comrie an opportunity to get into the game.
And, you know, Dave, speaking of the AHL, you know, and Drew mentioning, you know, the defensive struggles that they've had this year, Thomas Chabot, who we know had that standout career with the St. John Sea Dogs, he was having a nice little year with the Belleville Senators, but because the Senators were struggling defensively, they've called up Thomas Chabot. He had his first NHL goal yesterday, and when you talk about, you know, this group. They've got Johnny Oduya playing up there with Eric Carlson. And sure, Johnny Oduya, I mean, he's no spring chicken.
No.
But he can still skate. And, you know, Dion Phaneuf and Cody Ceci, to me, that's going to be a very key matchup against the Jets. Because Dion Phaneuf and Cody Ceci, there's a really good chance that they go up against the Brian Little, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers line, which we know, guys, is coming into this game kind of hot, right? So Dion Phaneuf and Cody Ceci, that's kind of the shutdown pair for the Senators, and then you've got Oduya and Carlson, kind of similar to the Jets with Kulikov and Myers, Dave.
Yeah.
That's kind of been your shutdown pair, with Morrissey and Trouba being your top pair, right? And, you know, you look at that group of defensemen. Frederick Claesson is actually a pretty nice defenseman. Like his game. You know, we talked about Chabot. I mean, Chabot, guys, he's going to be the future of this team on defense. I mean, Carlson's not an old player. He's still in his late 20s. But when you're talking about Chabot, we know how good he was in the World Juniors last year. So when you look at this, you know, defense as a whole, we talked about, you know, the Pizza Man, Johnny Oduya, and, of course, Eric Carlson. Still, in my opinion, the best defenseman in the league. I still think the Senators can turn this around. And, you know, they've gone through a losing streak here, but we know they're very well coached with Guy Boucher. We know Matt Duchesne's going to come around.
Yeah, I mean, he's only got 1 point.
He's only got 1 point in eight games. He's going to come around. So Senators are going through a bit of a rough patch, but we saw that with the Montreal Canadiens. We saw that with the New York Rangers, and those teams have turned it around.
You know, they really do need Matt Duchesne to get going, because this team is very top-heavy when it comes to goal scoring. I mean, you got Mike Hoffman, you got Mark Stone, you got Derek Brassard. After that, there's sort of a significant drop-off when it comes to the offense for the Ottawa Senators that I think, you know, it might be impacting them at this point this year.
Right, and, you know, when you talk about, you know, the acquisition of Matt Duchesne, Kyle Turris was playing okay.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, Kyle Turris, you know, was having necessarily a bad year, and he's been really good with Nashville. I think it was more so, you know, where these guys are at with their contracts, right? Kyle Turris obviously signed the six-year deal right after he was acquired by Nashville. Just saying, there were other factors aside from the types of players, because both of those players are offensive-minded players. But, you know, to me, that's not the bigger concern. The staple of this team has been their defensive structure. So sure, Drew, do you want more secondary scoring from the Ottawa Senators? Sure, they'd love Bobby Ryan to be producing more. They'd love more out of Derek Brassard. You know, they'd like more out of a lot of the players, especially, you know, in the bottom six. But to me, if the Ottawa Senators don't start playing better in front of Craig Anderson or Mike Condon, because if Anderson keeps struggling, I would expect that they maybe start to go with Mike Condon a little
Condon's
bit more.
Condon's got the better of the two numbers, that's for sure. I mean, but it's hard to believe, just given how good, you know, how important Craig Anderson has been to this team for so long.
Craig Anderson is a top 10 goalie in the NHL, in my opinion.
He has been. He's not playing like it this year.
No, he's not.
But again, is that a function of the way the team is playing in front of him?
I mean, sometimes
your goalie can only do so much. We saw, look at Connor Hellebuyck this year when the team is playing a better collective team defense versus this team last year. Now, admittedly, they have more talent this year and they're healthier. But the fact is that we see what happens when you have a good goaltender playing in front of a team that's not playing well defensively, and that can only take you so far. So I understand the point, Drew, and he has to play better, but at the same time, it's not just on him. It's a collective team effort.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave, and it's a valid point. It'll be interesting. Just to Dave's question there, Ez, about Eric Comrie, I think I agree with you, Dave, that I would not be surprised to see Eric Comrie get the start in goal for the Jets tomorrow. That gives Connor Hellebuyck really, you know, it gives him Saturday, Sunday, and Monday off. Tuesday, they're into Detroit. I expect Hellebuyck would be back in the net
in his home state on
Tuesday. I think it's a good opportunity to give Hellebuyck a few days off to get Comrie into a game, because you heard Paul Maurice say that he doesn't want Comrie sitting on the bench, that he's going to have to play with Steve Mason being out of the lineup. Would you think that it's going to be a reasonable opportunity for Comrie tomorrow?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Comrie starts in net for the Jets. And, you know, the Jets' schedule, there aren't many back-to-backs coming up, so I think that factors in as well, right?
Because, you
know, maybe Comrie would be an option for the back-to-backs. But, you know, the Jets are rolling right now, and, you know, Connor Hellebuyck didn't have his best night last night, guys, let's be honest. I mean, I wouldn't say that, you know, he had a bad game, but when you let in four goals, I wouldn't say you had a good game either, right? So, I mean, if the Jets do go with Eric Comrie tonight, it would be nice for the youngster to get, his second NHL start.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Of course, we'll find out maybe later on this morning when they hold their media availability. And if we find out that information, we'll, of course, share it with you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Should make mention that the previous segment was brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli has their 5 big screen TVs, great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. When we come back, AJ Jakubek is the Senators' pre- and post-game show host. He joins us from Ottawa to talk about more about the Jets' opponent tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Toy Mountain at CF Polo Park. Come say hello. We're on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. We're live at CF Polo Park. It's Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army. Come on down, drop off a new unwrapped toy. There's great prizes to be entered into a draw to win. We're accepting cash donations. It's a great time here at CF Polo Park. Spider-Man is here. Santa Claus is here. Is that Elsa from Frozen?
I think it is. It's okay. The Elsa when she's already grown up.
How do you know that?
I have nieces. Come okay. On, what do you want from me?
Well, there you go. So Elsa's here, apparently.
Drew, I think you're too old to sit on Santa's lap.
It's a big party here at CF Polo Park. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Ottawa Senators pre- and post-game show host AJ Jakubek. AJ, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure.
AJ, big victory for the Senators last night. They get off that schneid. They get off that losing streak with that 6-5 victory in Brooklyn over the Islanders. 9-9-6 so far this year for the Senators. Anytime you only have 9 wins in your first 24 games, things haven't been going as swimmingly as you would expect for last year's Eastern Conference finalist. What's been the big bugaboo for the Senators thus far this season?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, last year they just they wrote a lot of magic to get one goal away from reaching the Stanley Cup final. I think there are a lot of different storylines. They're playing for Brian Murray and his family. They're playing for Craig Anderson and his family and his wife Nicole as she was battling cancer. They were playing for Clark MacArthur, who surprisingly came back. He thought his career was done and had a pretty big role in the postseason, including scoring the game winner in overtime in Game 6 against the Bruins, which sent Ottawa to round 2. So everything just seemed to go their way, plus a new coach in Guy Boucher, and everyone bought into the system. And I think, there are a lot of things that certainly just went Ottawa's way last season. And this year, things started quite well, although they really threw away a lot of points at home early on in the season. Even though they were playing well on the road, they go to Sweden, they get a couple of wins against Colorado, and then it just basically fell apart after that, 0-6-1 in the last 7 games. Eric Karlsson hasn't looked the same in this stretch, and that's the biggest thing. When Eric Karlsson is on, and I mean for about 4 months straight last year, end of the regular season, into the playoffs, Eric Karlsson was on. I think he was as good as anyone in the National Hockey League in that stretch last year. So that makes this team very difficult to beat, but he certainly has battled injuries with that surgery he had on his foot in the off season, and hasn't looked the same. And even his body language hasn't really looked the same as well. So I don't know if that's an issue. He made some comments this week about possibly going elsewhere a year and 3/4 out from UFA status. So. And that's his right? I mean, everyone's got that right, and everyone should explore that right if that's the way they want to go. I just wonder about the timing of it, and so everything from that perspective, was a little bit curious, and this team, let's put it this way, got a badly needed win last night in Brooklyn because a lot of things weren't going their way over the last couple of weeks.
AJ, I'm sure Dave or Drew will ask you about Matt Duchene here in a couple of minutes. I wanted to ask you about Thomas Chabot. We were talking about him last segment. Picked up his first NHL goal, had a couple of assists in that win over the Islanders. When you consider how much the Senators have struggled defensively, has Thomas Chabot just been a breath of fresh air?
Yeah, and I think, look, he's going to go through some growing pains as well on the defensive side of the puck. But, boy, I mean, just the way he can skate, the way he moves the puck, you know, his mobility is fantastic. And he's got a lot of confidence. There's no shortage of confidence when you watch Thomas Chabot play, as we saw at times last night in that victory. So the fans have been clamoring for him to play and to play a bigger role, and he got that opportunity last night and flourished, and certainly the results speak for themselves with the 3 points and the Ottawa victory. So I don't think there's any question we're going to see Thomas Chabot in the lineup on Sunday in Winnipeg, and yeah, another special talent to watch over the next few years. We really saw his quote-unquote coming out party. We knew how good Thomas Chabot could be, just watching him play at various levels in junior hockey, in the World Juniors as an 18-year-old, and certainly in his first camp with the Ottawa Senators. But last year at the World Juniors, he showed that he had the potential to be a star, and he was the best player in that event. And I think Senators fans are certainly looking forward to a lot more quality years from him. Just a sign of things to come, what we saw maybe last night with that 3-point outing.
You know, AJ, you touched on it in your opening answer about Erik Karlsson, and, you know, there were some waves caused even out here in Winnipeg, so I suspect they were big in Ottawa, even though the comment was made in Brooklyn, when he said, "When I go to market, I'm going to get what I'm worth, and it's going to be no less no matter where I'm going." So let me ask you, as someone who covers the Senators, what kind of stir did those comments cause?
Well, certainly in town, it created a big buzz for sure. And you know, the thing about Erik Karlsson is he's always been very upfront when he comments on things. And so sometimes he's going to have comments that rub people the wrong way because he speaks his mind. And I think you see that about a lot of different Swedish players. You know, Daniel Alfredsson, the same way. At times he would say things so matter of fact that it would take people aback, most notably when they played against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the playoffs and, you know, basically was asked if they had a chance of coming back down 3-0 in the series and said probably not. And that's one of those things you just don't hear very often, right, from an athlete, but it's honesty, and sometimes it can be a little refreshing to get that honesty. So we'll see what happens. A lot of variables here when it comes to the Ottawa Senators. I mean, there's rumblings about changes in ownership. Still nothing concrete on that front, but, you know, where there's smoke, you know, I always think there's the potential for some fire. So that's something definitely worth monitoring, especially with you know, the new arena possibility downtown and negotiations ongoing between Eugene Melnyk and his group that's trying to redevelop this land across from the Canadian War Museum in Ottawa and the National Capital Commission. And so, I mean, we'll see where talks go on that front. And, you know, I think these rumors won't go away in terms of ownership, and I think it's all linked. So, you know, to the players and to the hockey club. So a lot of different variables. You know, the bottom line for Erik Karlsson is there's 3/4 of a season left, and they've got to play this season before they can even start to negotiate. And between now and then, July 1st next year, a lot could, and I think a lot will happen with this franchise on and off the ice. So, To speculate now where Erik Karlsson is going to be in a couple of seasons, I think it's a little bit premature.
AJ Jakubek is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Ottawa Senators. They'll be in town tomorrow evening to play the Jets. AJ, last night Bobby Ryan took a slash from Nick Leddy. Sort of any update on Bobby Ryan on his hand? You know, is that the concern for the Senators? And then secondly, goal scoring in general for the Senators, only one goal on the year for Ryan. How concerned is the team, is the franchise, about the lack of goal scoring so far this year?
Yeah, well, he leads the league in being slashed in the hand. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, it's just one of those things where, you know, he's had some bad luck there. And 6 different injuries over the course of his time with the Ottawa Senators with his hand and his finger, and that certainly doesn't help when you're a goal scorer. So, you know, no update yet, but he did finish the game last night for the Senators in terms of the goal. I mean, it was an ugly one, but he went to the front of the net, and when you go to the front of the net, good things like that happen, and it bounced off his skate and in for him. So, you know, for Bobby Ryan, I think you just hope he can get healthy, because, you know, he played a big role last year down the stretch and into the playoffs for Ottawa, scored some big goals, and you know, early on this season before he hurt his hand again, even though he hadn't scored a goal, he was looking excellent on the line with Derek Brassard and Mark Stone, and they've reunited that trio as well. So I think that certainly will help. Zach Smith got his first goal of the season last night as well, so to get a couple players get off the schneid like that, certainly a big monkey off their backs, and we'll see if they can both carry that forward into a little bit more confidence offensively starting tomorrow against the surging Jets team.
AJ, I'm sure on TSN 1200 there in Ottawa, it's been a hot topic, the goaltending. We're very familiar with goaltending being a hot topic here in Winnipeg, not so much this year with the way Connor Hellebuyck has been playing, but when you consider that Mike Condon went in for Craig Anderson yesterday and picked up a win over the New York Islanders, are you expecting Mike Condon to get the start tomorrow night against the Jets, and are you expecting Mike Condon maybe to maybe get a bigger share of the workload here going forward?
Yeah, I mean, Craig Anderson, you know, he struggled last night, and he hasn't had the type of season that we've seen from him the last 6 years here in Ottawa. He's been outstanding. To me, he's been top 10 for sure, and pushing top 5 goalie in the National Hockey League consistently since he arrived in Ottawa in 2011. I mean, fans, I can remember when fans were upset about the trade that brought him over here in 2011 because it cost them a spot in the lottery. I mean, they were second worst in the National Hockey League when they made that deal with Colorado with Brian Elliott going the other way, and they ended up picking number 6. So it cost him a few spots in the lottery with how well he played, and he's been just consistently very good ever since. At times he's been injured, but, you know, with Ottawa, and they've had good depth in goal, you know, whether it's been Robin Leonard or Ben Bishop, Andrew Hammett and the Hamburglar run, or, of course, Mike Condon last season, goaltending has always been the least of Ottawa's worries, really, since he arrived in 2011. But this year, they both struggled. And, you know, Condon in the last couple of games has looked pretty good. He looked good in that start in Montreal on Wednesday night, even in a 2-1 defeat. And he looked great, stopping all 19 shots last night in relief of Craig Anderson, who gave up 5 goals on 18 shots. So given how Condon's played the last couple of games and the fact that he led them to their first win after 7 straight without one, 0-6-1 in that stretch, I'd be very surprised if the Senators didn't go with Mike Condon tomorrow in Winnipeg.
AJ, as he said at the beginning of his question, that one of us would ask you about Matt Duchene. So here's the Matt Duchene question. He's played 10 games for the Senators. He has 1 goal, 1 assist. Overall, how would you evaluate his play since the trade with Colorado?
He's been okay. I think we've seen some really good things from him down low. He's a guy that certainly creates some havoc and is difficult to knock off the puck. I think chemistry right now seems to be an issue with Matt Duchene and his line mates, a guy that, you know, there's certain guys that aren't the easiest to play with, and that's, you know, Sidney Crosby's always had a difficult time finding line mates that work well with him, that mesh with him. That's why, you know, having Chris Kunitz there, you know, was such an important part for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And so Duchene's a guy that I think it might take some time to get used to him as a line mate, and you know, there may be some chemistry issues for a while, but you know, I think overall, once he gets comfortable here and once players get comfortable with him and his style of play, I think he's still going to be a very good addition. We see this around the NHL a lot, where sometimes teams acquire a player, you know, typically it's around deadline time or maybe a few weeks before, as teams have looked to add players as rentals maybe towards the end of the season, and they don't really fit, and then maybe they come back the next year and all of a sudden they look like a completely different player. So for Matt Duchene, this is his first trade ever. He was never traded in junior, played 2 years with Brampton, and played his entire NHL career in Denver with the Colorado Avalanche. So there's an adjustment. There's an adjustment that needs to happen off the ice, certainly on the ice, with tendencies and everything that go with playing this game. And then add in you know, the system that Guy Boucher plays, and that's going to take some time as well. So at times, he's looked like a bit of a fish out of water, but at times you can see those flashes of why they acquired a player of such magnitude, a guy who's been a gold medal winner and a World Cup winner. So he's played on Canada's last two best-on-best programs and won with them. And, you know, when the brass thinks so highly at the Canadian level of a player like that, you know you're getting a really good player. So I think, hey, it's going to take some time with Matt Duchene, but in the end, if they're patient, I think they're getting still the best player in the deal, even though Kyle Turris has been off to a much better start in Nashville than Duchene has been here in Ottawa.
AJ, we'll let you go on this last question. We're a Winnipeg-based show, so we have to ask you about Mark Stone. You know, he's leading the Senators, I believe, in goals so far this season. Is it, you know, destiny for his career just to be underappreciated for just how good of a goal scorer he is in the NHL?
Yeah, I hope not, because, you know, speaking of best on best, and, you know, it's unfortunate there's no Olympics this year in that regard, but that's a story for another day. Mark Stone is a guy that I think whenever there's another international tournament involving best on best should merit serious consideration for a spot. He's Ottawa's best forward, you know, and that was the case even when they had Kyle Turris, and, you know, that's the case with Mike Hoffman in the lineup, who's a super talented player. But, you know, ever since the Hamburglar run a couple of years back, 2014, 2015, second half of that year, Mark Stone's career has just taken off. And it's not just what he does, putting the puck in the net. It's just how smart a player he is. He makes other players better. I mean, typically you see that out of centermen. He's a winger that makes other players better. He's just such a cerebral player when he's out on the ice. And just the fact that he's up there in the takeaways category every year, you watch him and just his anticipation of the puck, it's tremendous. He isn't the prettiest skater. He's really improved that part of his game. He still gets by and still... I don't think that's an issue for him anymore, but, you know, when he was drafted in the sixth round, and I remember I used to be the play-by-play voice of the Edmonton Oil Kings out in Edmonton, and I remember watching him as a 16 and a 17-year-old with the Brandon Wheat Kings and always thinking, wow, this is a good, real good player. If he can just improve his skating a little bit, he should be a real good National Hockey League player. And he worked on his skating. It's a lot better, and the other parts of his game are all there. So I love his fire. I just love everything about him on and off the ice. And Mark Stone, to me, is by far the most important forward on this Ottawa team. And hopefully that underappreciation won't last, because he is definitely one of the elite wingers in the National Hockey League, in my opinion.
A.J. Jakubek is the Ottawa Senators pre- and post-game show host. A.J., appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, guys. Yeah, looking forward to tomorrow. Your Jets are looking pretty good. I've thought for 2.5 years this is the team that should be a lot better. But Mr. Maurice is getting them to play finally. And, yeah, should be a fun one tomorrow.
It should be. AJ, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Take care. We're live at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain. It's for the Salvation Army. There's people everywhere dropping off toys. You can also make cash donations. Come on down, say hello to us. We're here until 12 noon, and the Toy Mountain parade goes on until 9 o'clock tonight. When we come back, we look ahead to the Jets, the rest of the Jets' month of December. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.